ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम् Canto 7, Chapter 9, Text 19, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Balasya neha saranam pitarau nrishimha. Nartasya chagadamudandvati madjatau nauh. Taptasya tatrat. Tasya tat pratividhya yadi hanja seshtas. Tavad vibhotanu bhritang twadupekshitanam. Translation. My Lord, this is Prahlad speaking to Nrisimhadev. My Lord Nrisimhadev, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a father and mother cannot protect their child. A physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient, and a boat on the ocean cannot protect a drowning man. Purport. Through parental care, through remedies for different kinds of disease, and through means of protection on the water, in the air, and on land, there is always an endeavor for relief from various kinds of suffering in the material world. But none of them are guaranteed measures for protection. They may be beneficial temporarily, but they afford no permanent benefit. Despite the presence of a father and mother, a child cannot be protected from accidental death, disease, and various other miseries. No one can help, including the parents. Ultimately, the shelter is the Lord, and one who takes shelter of the Lord is protected. This is guaranteed. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktav pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Therefore, unless one is protected by the mercy of the Lord, no remedial measure can act effectively. One should consequently depend fully on the causeless mercy of the Lord. Although as a matter of routine duty, one must of course accept other remedial measures, no one can protect one who is neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this material world, everyone is trying to counteract the onslaught of material nature, but everyone is ultimately fully controlled by material nature. Therefore, even though so-called philosophers and scientists tried to surmount the onslaught of material nature, they have not been able to do so. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the real sufferings of the material world are four: janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age, and disease. In the history of the world, no one has been successful in conquering these miseries imposed by material nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah. Nature, Prakriti, is so strong that no one can overcome her stringent laws. So-called scientists, philosophers, religionists, and politicians should therefore conclude that they cannot offer facilities to the people in general. They should make vigorous propaganda to awaken the populace and raise them to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Our humble attempt to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world is the only remedy that can bring about a peaceful and happy life. We can never be happy without the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Twad upekshita nam. If we keep displeasing our Supreme Father, we shall never be happy within this material world. in either the upper or lower planetary systems. This is a prayer of Prahlad, one of the collected prayers collected in Srimad Bhagavatam, the prayers that Prahlad offered to Nrsimhadev after Nrsimhadev had killed Hiranyakashipu, who was superficially the father of Prahlad. The actual father is Nrsimha. So these prayers are collected in the Srimad Bhagavatam because they're of such value. There may be various people, just like not so very far from here at Tirumalai, so many people are praying to Balaji just now, and practically all day, every day, so many people are going. Their prayers will not be recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad's prayers are of great value because Prahlad is a pure devotee of Krishna. He knows how to pray to Krishna. He knows that Krishna is the actual protector. Hiranyakashipu was only the superficial protector. Hiranyakashipu thought that he was sheltered. Now I've got all these benedictions. I can't be killed on the land or in the air or in the water, inside, outside, in the day or the night, by any weapon, by any animal, demigod or human being. He thought he was sheltered. He thought he was protected. But he was neglected by the Twad Upekshitanam. He was neglected by the Supreme Lord because he himself neglected the Supreme Lord. He thought he could outsmart him. So Hiranyakashipu, as is well known, he acted in a most horrific way toward Prahlad. The general rule is that the children should follow the parents. Prahlad didn't do so. Because Hiranyakashipu wasn't following Krishna. We accept any authority because they follow the supreme authority. The system is, in any society all over the world, that one should accept an authority. But we accept that authority because they accept the supreme authority. It can be in a chain of command also. Just like in the army, the private follows the sergeant, who I'm not exactly the order, corporal, and then general, major general, and they have to follow who? The president of the state. Ultimately, so there's a chain of command. But the president of the state, the king, is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he acts on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So authorities don't have to be followed if they don't follow the Supreme Lord. The breakdown of monarchy all over the world came because the monarchs stopped representing the Supreme Lord and then they just represented themselves. They want to make themselves the supreme authority without deference to the Supreme Lord. But what happens then is that the citizens, they don't want to follow. They only want to follow if they can get some benefit. It all becomes quite mundane because if there's no ultimate authority, no spiritual authority, then if the kings only, or whatever they call themselves, king, president, or whatever, they are simply ruling for their own sense gratification, then the citizens also want sense gratification. There's no divine purpose in the state, and then the leader, they have to say that in the modern age of so-called democracy, the leader has to say that, well, we're acting for your benefit, for the citizens, but everyone knows that they're not fooled by this. They know that the politicians, they're acting for their own benefit. Or even if they want to act for the benefit of the citizens, they cannot actually. There are greater forces beyond them. Vasudev Datta Prabhu told me he met some big politician in Sri Lanka, and he said that Vasudev said to him, all this industrialization is coming to Sri Lanka. This is not actually good for the people. You should stop that. He said, we'd like to, but there are greater forces than us at work. They're not actually in control of their own country. What's supposed to, the citizens can vote for them, but the decisions are made somewhere else outside the country, not inside the country. So it doesn't really matter who they vote for. It's just a different face, but the policy will be the same. So Prahlad, he saw through all this sham, and he wasn't a good son in Hiranyakashipu's estimation. Actually, he was the best son because he gave Hiranyakashipu the right kind of advice, but Hiranyakashipu didn't want to accept it. Prahlad, he wasn't disturbed by the torture meted out to him by Hiranyakashipu, because he knew that he was sheltered by Krishna. Generally, the children take shelter of the parents. It's a natural thing. In most species, you see the little chickens, the chicks, they run behind the mother hen. If the mother just turns coarse, she sees something which looks tasty. Often you'll see the chicken is walking, and they walk suddenly to one side, and all the little chicks behind, they all change course also and go behind her. But the innocent little chicks, they cannot be protected by the mother, because the mother cannot even protect herself. She's busy protecting the little chicks. But one day will come when the master or the owner picks up the hen and cuts her throat. And the same will happen to all the other little chicks also. There are millions of chickens in the world, and hardly any of them ever die a natural death. They all get their throats slit. So they're controlled, but not by any benevolent control. It's a condemned birth. You're born to be slaughtered. They're kept in human society for the purpose of being killed, giving eggs which are taken away from them mostly, and then they're killed. And there may be some others, cocks which are kept for fighting. Used to be a popular sport, not so much now. Did you see that in your childhood? Cocks in the village fighting? You saw that. Now all the animal lovers, they've made all over the world, they've stopped the cocks fighting. They haven't stopped the cocks killing yet, but the cock fighting has largely been stopped. So some minor advance for the cause of animal rights. So Prahlad is an enlightened person, exceptional. We don't find Prahlads in every child. We don't find Hiranyakashipus in every father, fortunately. Although in one sense, most of the fathers today do represent Hiranyakashipu, indirectly, because they don't instruct their children about Krishna consciousness. And even if their children do take an interest, mostly they oppose that. So there are lots of little Hiranyakashipus running around. But we don't see that many young Prahlads. Prahlad is here, he's explaining why he isn't disturbed. I mean, normally if the father tries to kill the child, what do you say normally? It's not a normal condition. But it would be expected that the child would become extremely disturbed, because the child goes to the father for shelter. Expect shelter from the child. But in this case, Prahlad wasn't at all disturbed. His father was disturbed. His father was extremely disturbed at him, but he wasn't disturbed at the father. And Prahlad is he has a completely philosophical outlook on all of this. He can understand what's going on. He's not seeing from within the goldfish bowl. That's a saying. The goldfish within the bowl. How to explain this? There's a little glass bowl about this size in which goldfish, one kind of fish, is kept, and the goldfish goes round and round the bowl because there's nowhere else to go, and his whole universe is the goldfish bowl. He's a goldfish in a goldfish bowl, and that's as far as he can think. Those who are outside, they can look inside and they can know more about the goldfish's situation than the goldfish himself, because they're seeing from outside the bowl. So Prahlad, his understanding was not limited to this tiny little world in which we think of in terms of, as Prahlad points out here, in terms of friends and enemies, in terms of our bodily maintenance and sense gratification. He had a completely different vision. The vision that he imparts here, which he himself received from Narada. So Prahlad is exceptional. He's able to be Prahlad, means very happy, even in a situation in which others cannot be happy. The normal situation is that children, whether human or non-human, they take shelter of the parents. But it's an illusion. Just like the chicken cannot protect. How can the chicken protect the chicks when the chicken herself is going to be killed? She does protect the chicks because the owner allows that to go on, but they're just with the idea, all right, let it go on, and when the chicks are bigger, then we'll cut their throats. So in the same way, this material world, it's so cruel that the parents, they cannot protect the children because they themselves are subject to death, subject to disease, subject to old age, subject to rebirth. So the children, they naturally run to the shelter of their parents. But it's an illusion. First of all, the children are not the body. They're running for they take shelter and maintenance from the parents. But what they seek protection for, that they are not. They seek for protection for the body. But they are not the body. So it's all a big illusion that everyone's living in. And the parents also, they like to take that role. They feel satisfied in that role. People like to have children and they like that. The children will come to run to them. But gradually as the children grow up and then they assert their independence and there comes a time when they're old enough to do everything by themselves and they don't need the parents. And in the Western world, at this point, the children, they may rebel against their parents. They don't want their parents to... The parents control them. The parents have to control the children for the children's own good. If you know, unless you control little children, they'll drink some poison that's kept in the house for killing cockroaches or something like this. And then the children, they may drink it, so they have to be protected. Otherwise, or they may kill each other, literally, or just because they're not very much coordinated. Their intelligence and their bodies are not very much coordinated, so they may just fall down the stairs or something like this. So children have to be controlled And the parents tend to go on doing that even when the children don't need it physically so much. And then in the Western countries especially, they rebel against the parents. But what they don't understand is that even though physically they may not need control, mentally they do. Because young people tend to be exceptionally foolish, more foolish than older people. Because the senses are very strong and their intelligence is overwhelmed by sensual desires, and they tend to do things which are very harmful to them. For instance, it's very common. I'm giving examples from the Western world because the society there, it exemplifies the material condition more because they have less culture there. So, for instance, it's a normal thing that young people in the Western world will go to parties where the music is playing at a very loudly, and gradually they don't notice it, but their power of hearing becomes impaired for life. So it would be advisable, don't do that. But at the moment, it's such fun, they're dancing, and it's so loud, and they're enjoying it so much, and the fact that they're going to have to suffer for the rest of their life, they don't even notice as the hearing power gradually decreases. So in youth, the desire for sense gratification is so overwhelming, and it seems so desirable that you just don't care for future consequences. And therefore, the parents should control, but the children, I don't need you, and they rebel. Or it may be that if children are still in the house at age 18 or so, and the parents will just throw them out and say, get out of here, I looked after you long enough, because the parents also want their own sense gratification. We still don't see that in India. The parents will go on looking after the children, and the children are respectful to the parents. That's generally the tendency is there. Why is that? Well, it's the vestiges of dharma, of understanding that the relationship between the children and the parents, it's not simply a physical relationship like the chicks with the hen, but there's some understanding that, well, you have to respect your parents, that's the proper thing to do. This all comes from the understanding of dharma, that one, there are rules of the universe which one has to follow. Not only parents, respect to elders. Although I remember in my childhood, I regret to say, but that's the culture I was raised in, we used to mock elders. And especially if they're very old and they can't walk properly, we'd mock them. For you see, they're so useless, they can't even walk properly. Because in a culture where the only purpose of life is sense gratification, then an old person who can't walk properly is considered completely useless. So we just used to mock them, not thinking that the time will come when we'll also be in that situation. So it's a horrible culture. But still in most of the world, if we think of, I'm not sure what's going on in China, but most of Asia and Africa, where they're not, the westernization hasn't totally taken over, people tend to respect elders. And the background of that is dharma, that there is an order within the universe, and the elders, the parents, they are representatives of God. So that's not a very clear idea, but it's still going on in the culture. So it's an illusion that the parents can protect the children. But in another sense, physically they may not be able to, but they have to protect in another way, actually a much more important way, and that is to give them the spiritual knowledge by which they can become free from birth and death. And that is stated here in the fifth, in the Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, that famous verse, Guru na sasyat, janani na sasyat, pita na sasyat. What is it? Daivang na tatsyat. Swajan, Guru na sasyat, swajano na sasyat. Pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat. Daivang na satsyan na patischa sasyat. Namochi adhyasamupeta mrityam. One shouldn't accept any role of being in a superior position, either as guru or relative, elder relative, father, mother, demigod, unless one can deliver one's dependence from birth and death. So, in a much more important way, the parents, gurus, elders, teachers, they have to protect their children or dependents. They also have to protect them physically, clothe them, feed them, shelter them. That's also required, but they should know and they should teach their children also that ultimately they cannot protect this. That's all in the hands of God, in the hands of fate. The parents can't stop the children getting sick. They can take precautions against them getting sick, hygienic measures, and give them good food, but they can't stop them getting sick. It's beyond their control. But the parents can teach the children that we have to take shelter of Krishna, and you go to the spiritual world, and there's no sickness in the spiritual world. So in this way, they can protect the children in the best possible way. It's the natural tendency of children to take shelter of parents and elders. It's a frightening world for little children when they're little like this, and there are all these big people all around them. And unless they know who those big people are, then they tend to be afraid. If some stranger comes who they don't know, and they tend to be afraid. And you can imagine, I don't know if we can remember back to our childhood, but see some big person and they can just knock you over, and they talk in a voice which may seem very loud, and you tend to be afraid, and then they'll run to their mother. For they're confident in their mother's shelter. So that's an illusion that the parents can protect, but it's a required illusion in one sense, because if the children don't have that shelter, unless they have confidence that the parents, they protect us, the children are completely dependent to be fed in all respects. The parents just completely control the children, but they do so for the benefit of the children, and the children, they reciprocate, they take shelter, that they don't have a big philosophical debate within their mind, but they just, about whether they should or not, but just naturally they take shelter of the parents, and that is required for them, just even for their body to grow up. And it's also psychologically required, because if they don't have that, then they tend to become very disturbed in their mind. Prahlad was an exceptional case. We don't hear about his mother after he was born. Presumably she was looking after him and feeding him and all these things, but from his father's side, he was, everything was all right until Prahlad just started preaching to him. Otherwise, his father must have been patting him on the head and all these kind of... But his father's attitude toward his son changed. Well, in the beginning, he just couldn't believe that, how can my son say such stupid things? What is this? Worship Vishnu? He couldn't believe. He said, it must be someone else's fault. But then when he discovered that actually Prahlad is a full-fledged Vaishnava, then Hiranyakashipu's love for his son changed into extreme hatred. Hatred in itself is extreme. So, which just goes to show that he never really loved him in the first place. He loved him for the sense, that Hiranyakashipu would get, for the sense of his boy looking up to him and praising him as a father. So actually, this father and mother and child relationship in the material world—it's all based on sense gratification, actually, unless it's centered on Krishna. But generally, the children, unless they experience that shelter, and it's not just the fact that they get fed. That's a great mistake in the Western world. That the parenthood is not just giving the children food, but they require psychological shelter. So love, parental love, they require that. To grow up as what could be called psychologically balanced human beings. In the Western world, and increasingly I guess that's going to be there in India, that the children, they come home from school, there's no one there to receive them because the mothers and father are both out at work. And food, they're given some money and they buy some food from a McDonald's or whatever, or they take something out of the freezer. They come home and they take something out of the freezer, stick it in the microwave, take something out of a can and heat it up and like this. So the parents think, well, I'm doing everything, my duty to my children. I mean, there's food and they get clothes and all they need, but they need more than that. And unless they get that, then they tend to become psychologically disturbed. And therefore they think, what to do? It's become a common phenomenon that children in the Western world go to school with a gun and shoot a bunch of their classmates dead. What's wrong? We have to stop the guns. Don't give them guns. Well, that's a good start, but if they don't do it with guns, they'll do it with knives. Why are they doing it? They're so frustrated. They feel, no one loves me. So they feel no happiness in their life. So that feeling of love for the parents toward the children, that's one form of Maya, unless it's channeled in Krishna consciousness. But it's a necessary illusion. Without that, the children just grow up. They're so disturbed that they can't even think of anything exalted like Krishna consciousness. And they just devolve into the lowest mode of ignorance. And they take shelter of, where they don't have the psychological shelter of the parents, then they take shelter of intoxication, gross sexual activities, where they just exploit others' bodies. They don't care about anyone else because no one ever cared for them. Or if the parents, they fight in front of the children, then the children, they just can't accommodate it. The shelter that they need, and the feeling that the world is good, at least here in my home, the world is good, but they can't accommodate it, and then it becomes very, very disturbing to them. So these, we can say, are all mundane discussions, which might be more suitable for some parenting classes. Now they have, the culture is so much broken down that in the Western world that they have parenting classes. You have to go to classes to learn how to be a good parent. Otherwise, in normal society, you just grow up, your parents are there, and then you do with your children what they did with you, what your parents did with you, and it's a very normal thing, and maybe the father will slap the son sometimes, and then you also slap your son. But it's not. But nowadays, if you do that, then the child can go and complain to the police, and the father will be put in prison. You know, the father slaps the child sometimes, just a slap to discipline him. Well, that's expected. What is that? Srila Prabhupada used to quote the English saying, spare the rod and spoil the child. But any form of disciplinary measure, corporal punishment, is that's illegal now. Even you can't slap your own child. I mean, definitely you shouldn't beat your child black and blue, but you know, a slap sometimes, which just, you know, it hurts for 20 seconds or something, but it's the effect is there of showing the displeasure, and that is the displeasure of the father. And so the child responds, he doesn't want to displease the father. So that's an inverse method. It's actually an affection to discipline the children. So, yeah, it's an ironic situation that the parents can't protect the children, but they're some illusion of that. Unless someone's on the level of Prahlad or Narada, he was the son of a maidservant, which suggests that, as Srila Prabhupada described, the maidservants, they often boost their income by acting as prostitutes also, because they're not paid enough so they act as prostitutes also. So Narada, he was the son of a maidservant. There's no discussion of who his father is. And then when he was just 5 years old, his mother died also. And he took it as the mercy of Krishna, the plan of the Lord. But there are not many children like that who are so advanced. Dhruv Maharaj, he became advanced, but when he was rejected by his father, he became so disturbed that he vowed to, now I'm going to become more powerful than my father. And who knows what, if he had not become a Vaishnava and he'd become more powerful than his father, who knows what he would have done to his father in revenge and to his stepmother. But because he became a Vaishnava, then he behaved very nicely with them. But there are many stories like that. Someone's insulted, and then they go and gather an army, and then they capture that person who's insulted. The Drona and Drupada, they because of some insult, they become so disturbed. So generally the feeling is that children are very precious. So how to deal with them, look after them, so that ultimately they can become Krishna conscious. So they can take shelter of Krishna. But if their mind is so much disturbed that they have trouble taking shelter of anyone, even their own parents, they don't trust. There's no... The attitude of trust is totally undeveloped in them. So they can't trust anyone. They can't even trust... They can't trust Krishna. They can't trust anyone. So that's coming more and more in the modern age, that people, they just feel alone in the universe. Friends, if they have friends, it's something superficial, but they can't really trust anyone. The sense that we can trust Krishna, that you can trust God, how can they trust? They think the whole world is bad. Everything's against me. They think the whole universe is just working against me. Everything goes wrong all the time. So they become emotionally disturbed individuals in Tamagun, and then they just want to inflict suffering. The only pleasure they get in life is perverse, in which they inflict suffering on others. and they take some pleasure in that because they're just feeling so much suffering themselves that they just want to inflict suffering on others. And when they see, whether it's a fly or a chicken or a dog or, best of all for them, a human being. And sometimes they even, they make friendship with someone or they make a show of loving them just so that they can reject them and be nasty to them and inflict pain on them. So it's such a perverse mentality. So these are material psychological discussions, but we live in a very, very disturbed age. Srila Prabhupada so mercifully wanted to establish Varnashram Dharma. Just how people, the ultimate aim of Varnashram Dharma is so that people can come to Krishna consciousness. But even on the material platform, just so that people can live a life in which, first thing they get, the arrangement is there for food for everyone. There are many people who, even the parents want to give the children food. They don't have enough food. They can't afford food for their children. Actually, they could be afforded, but they have so many other. They have to pay for their cell phone and their moped, and then oftentimes they don't feed their children or themselves properly because they feel that all these things. We have to have a TV in the home. The first necessity is food, but they have other priorities because there's people are stupid. Yeah. So food, shelter, clothing, stable society, peaceful life, so that children can grow up and have faith in Krishna. If they see that their parents, the parents who they can trust throughout their life, and their parents are devotees, then naturally they'll be devotees, the children themselves. And because it's pratyakshavagamam dharmyam, they directly experience Krishna in their lives, where they do from very childhood. But if we're telling them susukam kartam avyayam, it's unending bliss, but the father is talking all Krishna conscious philosophy, and then it's fighting with the wife, and it doesn't make any sense to the children who are it'll be very difficult for them to surrender to Krishna because they don't trust. They don't trust that by doing so that they'll be benefited. So Krishna is the ultimate shelter, but the parents, rulers, gurus, teachers, elders, they have to act as representatives of Krishna if they're to impart that to others. So many times parents come to me and say, bless my child that he'll be a pure devotee. And almost always I tell them, you have to be a pure devotee. I can give blessing. You have to be a pure devotee. Then they can imbibe that from you. If you are a sense enjoyer, if you have material ambitions, then how are you going to, you think that just by some blessing, the children are going to become pure devotees? You have to be a pure devotee. Then the children will imbibe that. If you have other aspirations, then the children, they won't listen to your high-sounding philosophical words if you don't behave on that platform yourself. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this? No. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.